Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Eyes on Success, followed by Men's Health Magazine at 1:30.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Health Department will have immunization clinics 8:15 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday. Appointments are required for immunizations. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613.
This week on Texas Monthly Archives, we have three articles about the world-famous Chicken Ranch. We'll be reading the October 1973 long journalism piece called Closing Down LaGrange, and two shorter articles from the past decade, a memorial piece about the last madam at the Chicken Ranch from February 2012, and a reflective piece from May 2016 called The Road to the Chicken Ranch. Texas Monthly Archives, Thursday night at 7, Sunday afternoon at 2, and Monday at 1 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 84 and clear. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the mid-70s. Then tomorrow cloudy with a high in the low 90s. Tomorrow night mostly cloudy with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpey.
And I'm Pete Torpey.
As a visually impaired, there was a phase in life when my vision was dropping drastically. I found myself seeking help for the simplest things in life, making phone calls, managing my contacts, moving around in Uber. And then a turnaround happened. A sighted friend was helping me book Uber. He kept asking me questions, and I kept giving the selections. And voila, the booking was done. And this got me thinking, what if I could, right on this phone screen, build a virtual friend, exactly like my friend who was helping me book an Uber? And thus, Louis was born.
And this is the story of how today's guest tried to solve a problem for himself that wound up being very useful for many other people.
We'll speak with Pramit Bhargava about his Louis voice control system, and you'll get to hear this system in action and learn how it can be used to perform everyday tasks. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is really more of a life philosophy from Pramit.
I can share things from my life, experiences, not as a tip, but just what I've learned the hard way. So one thing, when I analyzed this three-year lost phase, I realized that I was trying to live life in the past. And often a great idea is to just poke yourself and say, okay, what is it? Where am I? What am I doing right now? How much can I see if I have a vision issue? And what is it that I really want to do? And that's a question I didn't ask myself. I didn't listen to my inner voice. And that was the result, I think, because of which it just took me so long to come out of this lost phase, just trying to live in the past.
Louis, I am sure, is helping you to focus on the future.
I think it has given me a great meaning in life. And, I can tell you, I used to be completely selfish and completely self-centered and, only everything was transactional for me. What is the benefit for me? To move from there to build something that can potentially help others as well and, with an objective that, can we positively impact lives of others. I think that's a wonderful switch to make. And, there cannot be anything more motivating or making one happier and giving peace.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
the Hadley Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired, offering the 2021 New Venture Business Competition to help blind entrepreneurs turn their ideas into actual startups. More information and submission criteria are at www.hadley.edu/NVC.
and by
NaviLens, a four-color QR code designed to be located and read from up to 60 feet away without the need to focus on it. Personal places and items can be tagged and shared with family and friends with codes obtained inside the NaviLens app, available for iPhone and Android. More information is at NaviLens.com.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Let's start by meeting Pramit.
I'm Pramit. I'm the founder of Louis Voice Control, and I'm also visually impaired. And Louis Voice is, in a way, all about solving my own problem.
And you are located in India, correct?
That's correct, near Delhi.
Tell us a little bit more about your background. Do you have a computer programming background or a business background?
Oh, okay, I have both actually. So I had a normal vision. I did my computer engineering and then went on to do my MBA. So I left engineering behind, but of course, you know, what you learn stays with you. I then pursued a career which was more in marketing and managing businesses. So I worked with global companies like Unilever, Motorola, Quest Diagnostics.
And I take it you lost most of your vision later in life, so you had to accommodate to doing things in a new way.
Yeah, a lot of it. But, you know, it happened about 21 years back that it was reaction of a drug where my vision just dropped drastically, literally overnight. I was getting some correction, and then 9 years back when there was a sudden drop, and that's when everything got cloudy, foggy, and I couldn't read anything at all. So the adjustment has been slow. It was only 9 years back that, like I said, it was so sudden that it took me completely by surprise. I didn't know how to deal with it. So I was sitting at home 3 years, doing nothing, completely dependent on others, not, you know, a lot of fear inside me, not really clear how to get out of it, how to deal with it.
It sounds like you're trying to create some of the solution yourself.
Yes, in a way. And I think I would like to thank a couple of people who actually got me onto this path. Because you can imagine, as I got out of it, I was doing the safe thing, you know, because I was using my past knowledge to do consulting. And then to suddenly think of, you know, stopping all that, getting into a new startup. And yes, of course, it was a big motivator to build something to solve my problem. Yet it can be difficult. But I think what really clinched it is when somebody actually pointed out that, you know, it's almost like a golden opportunity if you can leverage your disability to build something that can not only work for you, but hopefully for other people as well. And that got me thinking. I said, you know, I don't want to be on my deathbed and think, you know, and thinking, oh boy, only if I would have taken that opportunity. So I said, let me give it a shot. Let me take more risk in life and hopefully things will work out.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners.
Find out more about partnership opportunities by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is the Louis Voice Control System for smartphones.
In the introduction, you mentioned the name Louis. Can you give us sort of the elevator pitch about what Louis is?
Yeah, sure. It's called Louis Voice Control, and it allows users to give just voice commands to Louis. Louis is like a virtual friend. It will take your voice commands, and it will allow the user to completely control their favorite apps as well as the phone functionality, all with just voice commands.
And is this for Android, iPhone, both?
Currently for Android, because just to tell you, it was a very complex project technically. When I started off, every technical expert, every accessibility expert told me, don't waste your life, you won't be able to build it. Now, having built it for Android, having figured out the tricks of doing it, we want to do technical feasibility in the second half of the year and hopefully have it out for iPhones as well next year.
Nice. And where did you come up with the name Louis?
It so happens that the name is actually inspired from Louis Braille, who was the inventor of Braille. And of course, Braille has had so much impact in our lives. So I think Louis Voice Control, I think I'll be personally happy if it can have at least a fraction of that impact.
Now, when I first found out about this app, I thought, boy, this sounds pretty similar to what iOS calls voice control, which is primarily aimed at people with dexterity problems, whereby you can control your phone just with your voice. But when I looked into it a little bit more, it seems pretty different than that and serves a very special purpose that isn't served by voice control. Can you distinguish the two applications and how Louie is different?
Oh, yes. There is a dramatic difference between the two. So to begin with, the Apple voice control is essentially built for people who are sighted, but with a motor disability. Now, Louie is built keeping a blind person in mind who cannot see the screen at all. So that's difference number one. The second difference, let me just highlight it by giving you a very simple example. Let's say as a user, I'm looking to have a glass of water. Now, what one has to do in voice control is that if I have to ask voice control to bring me a glass of water, I need to be able to see the screen. I need to know what are the buttons which are on the screen, because what voice control takes as inputs are the buttons. So literally, you know, I'm just giving a simple example. So literally one has to tell voice control, okay, stand up, stand straight, move your left foot forward, right foot forward, move your hand towards the glass, something like that. You have to really give it step by step based on the buttons on the screen. With Louie, it's very different.
You have to be familiar with the entire UI before you can use voice control effectively.
Completely. Earlier, it used to be numbers on the screen. Now, it's a combination of numbers and buttons, so you can speak the buttons also. But you're absolutely right that you've got to be able to see it and you've got to know it very well. In the case of Louie, I don't need to know anything, because Louie, like I said, is a virtual friend sitting right there on the phone screen. It takes my voice commands and it will take care of all the buttons that it needs to press, you know, to get my work done. So if I say, Louie, get me a glass of water, literally, you know, then it's Louie's job to figure out, you know, what all buttons to press and get a glass of water. So there's a very dramatic difference between the two.
Well, it sounds like Louie can be much more functional and very easy to use than voice control on an iOS device.
I'll give you another example. Like, for example, let's take Uber. Now, Uber, often it happens that we have booked a ride, and for some reason I want to cancel it, right? And you've got to do it within a certain time frame, otherwise there are penalties. Now, normally what will happen, I won't know how to cancel it, right, or where the button may be. So Louie, I just say cancel my ride, and you know it goes and presses the cancel button, pop up, it handles the pop up as well, and the task is done. So that's the approach we have taken.
Well, and I heard the demos, and it really seemed like it was more akin to interacting with an Echo device or something like that, where it was a little bit more intelligent about what you were trying to do.
Absolutely. So that brings me to another set of differences. So it's more similar, I would say, to the voice assistants. Alexa, Google Assistant, Siri. But again, I would point out three very basic differences. So the first one is that Louie will do each and everything within a supported app. Now, if you take, let's say, the voice assistants, they'll typically do two or three things. So if you try Siri or a Google Assistant, they'll do two or three things. Same with Alexa. Second big difference is that Louie does continuous voice interaction. So if you have to get Uber booking done, then Louie has to be continuously handholding the user, telling them what options are there, taking the commands. So it has to be continuous handholding. And the third difference is that Louie is smart. So Louie, you can start off from any screen of the app that it supports. It will figure it out. It will start from wherever the user is. Voice assistants, if you see and you can try it out, they are programmed in a way that they'll always start from where, you know, from the beginning. So you can't open a certain app and you tell Siri, okay, Siri, do this for me. I mean, it doesn't work like that, actually. So there's a, you know, like I said, because it's built keeping a blind person in mind, the entire approach has been very different.
This is really intriguing. Can you demonstrate Louie doing a simple task?
Yes, I would love to.
So you've mentioned Uber many times, including how you got the idea for Louie in the first place when your friend was walking you through all the decisions for hailing an Uber ride. Can you start by demonstrating Uber?
Okay. Hey, Louie.
Hello, Pramit. Good to see you. Which app would you like to use? YouTube or Uber or WhatsApp?
Uber.
Say or spell destination.
Park Plaza.
Park Plaza Gurugram, would you like to select this location?
Yes.
Let's select a ride. Moto, 152 rupees.
Uber Go.
Uber Go, 2, 104 rupees.
Select.
Your pickup location is Hotel Radisson. Your destination is Park Plaza Gurugram. Payment method, test payment. Good to go with Uber Go.
Confirm.
Your booking is confirmed. Your driver is 8 minutes away. Driver profile, 5.0 star rating, white Chevrolet Aveo. Call or message driver.
Message.
Speak your message.
I'm wearing a blue shirt.
Got it.
Send.
Message sent.
That was pretty slick. How about if you show us how it works with YouTube?
All right. YouTube.
Please tell me the name of the video you want to search for.
Happy Original.
Pharrell Williams Happy, official music video, 4 minutes, 1 second. Would you like to play this video?
Yes.
Okay, playing video. Skipping ad. It might seem crazy. Video pause.
Forward 37 seconds.
Forwarding. Here's why. Because
I'm happy. Comment.
Speak your comment.
Hey, this is a great one.
Got it.
Send.
Comment added.
Share video.
Okay, sharing on WhatsApp. Say contact name.
Boss.
Video shared, going back to YouTube.
That is so cool. How does it work with contacts?
Contact.
Create a new contact, or search for an existing contact.
New contact.
Please speak the number you want to save.
+1 203 458 2829.
Say or spell the name by which you want to save this contact.
William.
Contact saved William.
Delete.
William contact has been deleted.
Edit.
Want to edit name or number?
Name.
Say or spell the new name.
Godfather.
Okay, name edited.
Block.
Okay, contact blocked.
And let's hear how this works with WhatsApp.
All right. WhatsApp.
Latest chat. Boss. 10:49 a.m. Simran. Yesterday.
Go to Godfather.
Opening chat. Received. Today. This message contains contact card. Do you want to save this contact?
Yes.
Say or spell contact name.
Tech Guru.
Saved.
Create a new group.
Say contact name.
Godfather. Add.
Say contact name.
Boss.
Set the name of the group.
My Mentors.
Group created.
Share location.
Current location or live location?
Current.
Current location shared.
Group call.
Voice call or video call?
Video call.
Starting video call. Video call.
Reach out to Pramit. Call or WhatsApp, +9 1 9 8 1 1 8 8 6 0 0 1. Email, pramit@louivoice.com.
Your demonstration included several apps that blind people frequently use. I take it that Louie is tuned to work with specific apps, not across the entire operating system.
That's correct. So the technology that we use allows us to actually work on, both on the screen as well as under the screen, under the hood, so to say. So what we can do is that we can work, let's say, on top of the screen on any app. So you, when using Louie, you will actually see most apps opening up and moving from one screen to another. And we can also work with APIs where we don't need to open the app. Now, what this means is that this gives us huge flexibility. Even when a screen is opened, I can actually work under the screen. So theoretically, Louie can voice enable any app. But you're right. It has to be done on an app-to-app basis and not as a general solution, because that's simply not possible.
Yes, because every app is a little bit different, and how you interact with every app is a little bit different. But I would guess that you are slowly expanding the number of apps for which Louis can be used.
Absolutely. So right now we are working on four different apps. So just to give you a flavor, email, Facebook Messenger, Google Search, because that's something, being able to browse around, read articles, and being able to read any kind of document, including a scanned PDF document, because we have just integrated image recognition with Louis. So the other thing what we have been doing is trying to solve the problems that visually impaired community faces. So for example, images. Now, Louis, for example, in the Messenger would be able to read a text message and equally easily be able to tell a user there is an image, this describe the image as well as read text on the image. Similarly, a lot of areas around the world do not have a stable internet or very extremely expensive internet. So Louis can work with, for apps which can work without internet, Louis works without internet as well.
Oh, I'm impressed. I assumed with all that AI built in that it had to go to the cloud to pick up some of its power.
Right. Absolutely. So, of course, when you're working offline, the accuracy is maybe about 70%. But then, it at least allows you to do your critical tasks. Like, let's say I'm somewhere, there's no internet, I want to call somebody, text message somebody, right? I think that task it does beautifully, actually.
So you mentioned that you have users from all over the world. What languages does Louis work in?
Okay, so we got users currently in 90-plus countries. Right now, it's only in English. So, like I said, going forward, I think we have got three tasks clearly cut out for us. So one is to voice-enable more apps and solve more problems. The second is to get onto platforms such as iPhones. And the third one is to get into more languages. So the next two languages that we're going to take on, and hopefully in the next 4 or 5 months, so the first one would be Spanish and alongside Hindi, which is used by a lot of people in India.
Sounds like this is an application that benefits you yourself, but you know, it takes a lot of technologists to put something like this together. How did this project gel?
All right. So, I'll just go back a little bit. So I was doing consulting. I went to meet a managing director of a venture capital company. It's a large Silicon Valley-based company. They're also big in India. And he heard my story, and out of the blue, he says, why don't you build apps for visually impaired people like yourself? And it sort of shook me. So he said, at a personal level, I'll help you. And he was true to his word. So I think that happened, and then there was a chance meeting I had with a friend. I had gone to meet him, and on the way back, he offered to book Uber for me. He took my smartphone. He kept asking me questions, and I kept giving the selections. And voila, the booking was done. And, on the way back in Uber, I just thought that was some wonderful experience. It was convenient, and yet as a visually impaired, I want to be independent, and I want to be in control. And here, I was the one calling the shots. I never felt out of control. So that is when the thought for Louis came, and I said, oh boy, if I can build a virtual friend right there on the phone screen, which does exactly what my human friend does. And that's what really got Louis Voice the...
And how big is your team now?
Okay, so we are about 13 people.
Wow.
So apart from me, there are three more visually impaired. The visually impaired team members are essentially into testing and defining the user experience. So that whole user experience is actually what is really critical. And then we got six developers. We got a couple of people in the marketing. So it makes up for a team of 30.
Pramit, what is your vision for how the Louis tools will be developed in the future?
Okay, so I think two ways is how I sort of look at it. Now, in a pure technology sense, the way we are trying to gradually build it is more like a platform. When I say platform, what I mean is that where Louis Voice is really like a platform on which other apps can come and integrate. So it's a bit like Alexa. You can create your own skills and put it on Alexa. So we want to create something similar like an SDK, which will allow other apps to maybe do 70-80% of the work. We do the last 20% integration, but which will allow us with limited resources to be able to bring a lot many more apps on the platform. So that's one. Secondly, from a user perspective, the way I would like to ideally build Louis over the next 3 to 5 years is to make Louis like a completely integral friend in our life. So Louis understands the needs of a visually impaired. Your day begins in the morning with an alarm, with news, with schedule and whatever else, and then moving around with Uber or whichever other taxi service. So basically it's there the whole day. I can do practically everything on the phone with just voice commands. So that's really I would say the final vision. Yeah, that's the hope, hopefully, because so we currently have investors in India, US and Singapore. And of course, the thing that they keep pointing out is that, look, there is only a certain amount number of apps or problems that you can solve with your own resources. So you've got to create a platform where SDK where others can come in and do it themselves.
And what is the funding model for Louis?
Right now, though I call it a social venture because there is a very clear social objective that we have, but otherwise it's structured just like any other tech startup would be in US. So we got investors. So as we go forward, the core model, revenue model that we're really looking at is saying that, look, as these companies voice enable their apps, can we charge the companies? So ideally, we would like to not charge the users, or if at all we have to do it, we want to keep it highly affordable. So that's the approach I want to take, because one part of accessibility, I strongly believe, we talk of accessibility typically in terms of screen readers. Is it accessible with voiceover? But I think one part of accessibility is also affordability. Can I afford it? And I think a project like this will be a waste if only 2% of the people can afford it and use it. And it's got to be highly accessible for everybody across the world.
Well, especially with unemployment being so high among the visually impaired community, if you can make it, if not free, at least very affordable to the user and have the supplier pay for creating the capability, that's a great model.
Absolutely. So that's the intent.
Well, it sounds like this has really been a fun venture for you and something that you must use daily in your own life.
Oh, yes, I'm the biggest user and the biggest critic of Louis. So I can tell you there is still a massive amount of work to be done. I mean, despite whatever, whosoever, people may say great work, etc. But, often I get in touch, I speak to a lot of users directly, and I keep pushing them, tell me how to improve it. Because sometimes something like saying nice app doesn't really help. But when somebody comes back and says, this didn't work, or why don't you make it work this way, this will be really better, do this, do that. All that helps, and that's what does. So a lot of focus right now is on user feedback.
What a creative idea, and I wish you guys a lot of success with it.
Thank you so much.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about the Louis voice control system, including how to get the app and how to contact Pramit directly.
Pramit, if people are interested in learning more about Louis and or acquiring the app, how would they go about that?
All right. So to acquire the app, just head over to Google Play Store. Louis is listed there as Louis Voice Control. And remember, Louis spelled out as L-O-U-I-E. Or you can just type in voice control as well. Even then, you will get the Louis listing. It's free to download. And if you would like to get in touch with me, my email ID is there in the Play Store description. But I would anyway spell it out right now as well. So it is pramit@louisvoice.com, where Pramit is spelled out as P-R-A-M-I-T. And like I had already mentioned, Louis is spelled out as L-O-U-I-E. So pramit@louisvoice.com.
Do you have a website?
Yes, so we have a website also, which is www.louisvoice.com.
And a social media presence?
Yes, so we do have a presence, so I'll be happy to share that. We are across on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn as well. In some cases in my name, in some cases as Louis Voice.
But you've sent us all of that, and we'll have that in the show notes.
Right, thank you.
And, of course, you'll be able to find all of that contact information in the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 2121. Next week on Eyes on Success, we will be talking with Larry Skutkan about his life, career, and his new venture in retirement. He worked for many years for the American Printing House for the Blind as a technology specialist, and he has many, many interesting stories to tell.
And that was certainly a fun interview. We hope you'll join us for that next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Men's Health Magazine, followed by USA Today at 2.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 87 and clear. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the mid-70s. Then tomorrow cloudy with a high in the low 90s. Tomorrow night mostly cloudy with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, and welcome to our program. My name is Peter Gilmore, and I'll be reading Men's Health Magazine here on site in the Sound Radio. First up, I'd like to finish an article from last week, Why We Lie. Here's a profile of Maxim Lapanov. I couldn't lie, and it cost me. In 2017, Maxim Lapanov was arrested and tortured for being gay. Unlike many of the other men and women in Chechnya's anti-gay purge, Lapanov went public with his story, suing the Russian government in a case now before the European Court of Human Rights. His is one of the stories chronicled in the documentary Welcome to Chechnya Today. He and his boyfriend live in a hiding in Europe. The question of honesty is complicated for me. I'm a very religious person, and I've always believed in honesty and justice. But I have, and my family has, suffered greatly for their honesty. I came out with my boyfriend to my family 7 years ago in Russia. Our mothers took it okay. Yeah, our siblings less so. What brought us together was physical labor. We have Dhaka gardens where we'd work together side by side. Gradually, they grew to accept us. I was picked by the Chechen police 4 years ago in the middle of an anti-gay purge. Hundreds of queer folk were arrested and tortured. I, for 12 days. And some killed. I signed a blank confession and promised to remain silent. But I couldn't. I worked with Russian lawyers to prove that I was an honest man and that what I had said happened to me had happened. But the Russian law was dishonest with me. My name appeared on a hit list with a reward for my death. I knew I wasn't safe. I went into hiding. Ideally, I want those responsible, who are still in power, to be called to account for their crimes. But if they're not, it was worth it to be honest. Since the film came out, I've heard from many queer friends in Russia who have said how proud they are of me. This is important, for it means they're no longer scared of being who they truly are. Next, very dark thoughts. Why so many men are having suicidal thoughts right now, and how they can get through it. Any safety concerns since last time? I ask my patients that question. Or a longer version. Are you having any thoughts about wanting to hurt yourself or wanting to die? Part of my work as a psychiatrist is identifying those who are at the highest risk for suicide and then doing my best to prevent it. There aren't concrete statistics for how many men are thinking thoughts like that at this very moment, but I can tell you it's not a small number. One survey by the CDC conducted last June suggested that twice as many people in the U.S. reported serious considerations of suicide in the previous 30 days, as felt that way in 2018. And Hispanics and black respondents were more likely to report it than people who are either white or Asian. Essential workers and unpaid caregivers also reported elevated rates of these thoughts. That's why I ask my patients about suicidal thoughts, also known as suicidal ideations. I was recently caught off guard when a longtime patient of mine, whom I'll call Peter, reluctantly admitted, to be completely honest, yeah, I've had thoughts like that off and on for years. Many of us at some point have speculated about the what-ifs of life or death. Usually when men are talking about this type of inclination, what they're looking for most is to feel supported. Only after I sat and listened to Peter's thought that I asked the next question. Question like, how long have the thoughts been going on? Have you considered a plan? It became clear that his experiencing passive suicidal thoughts, he wasn't actually planning to hurt himself, and he didn't want to. But every once in a while, he would think to himself, what if I weren't here? When I asked him why he hadn't told me about them before, he said, they're just thoughts, but they're really important to discuss. Lots of people don't want to say anything about suicidal thoughts, believing they make you seem crazy or off. Sometimes my patients are afraid that if they tell me, I'm going to admit them to a psychiatric hospital against their will. This is far from the first step. It's for urgent mental health crises, and usually men choose to go voluntarily. They're also worried that friends and family would feel uncomfortable if they said anything or would start to avoid them or act differently toward them. It's never comfortable talking about suicidal thoughts, and that's okay, because conversations about suicide aren't supposed to be comfortable. Staying silent is really what makes suicidal thoughts dangerous. That's when they could potentially gain traction and cause people to consider acting on them. Talking helps you learn how to make sense of what you're thinking so that you can develop healthy ways to move beyond it. Since Peter wasn't actively suicidal, we had some time to develop a long-term strategy that included ways for us to work through the issues that were leading to these ideas. When I asked Peter about when he noticed them the most, he said they tended to happen when he felt overwhelmed by his responsibility to be the best dad to his two kids or to live up to his family's expectations of him. It was life-changing when he discovered that whenever his mind shifted to passive suicidal thinking, it was his mind's way of telling him that it was overloaded. It was time to take a break. When he learned to listen to his mind, his suicidal thinking all but disappeared. If passive suicidal thoughts come up for you, it's critical to pay attention to what's causing them, to talk about them to someone you trust. Maybe time to make some changes to help yourself manage what's happening to your life, rather than feeling like suicide is the only way out. Since Peter had additional risk factors for suicide, he was struggling with mild depression, and he was drinking too much some nights to reduce stress, it was especially important for us to address what he was telling me. Simply being a man increases risk. Men die by suicide more than 3 times as often as women do. Substance abuse can drive up the likelihood as well, as can many other factors, such as illness, including bipolar disorder and schizophrenia, and upheavals in life or health. Even if you have all of these risk factors, suicide is still preventable. While there is no quick pill for getting rid of these thoughts, some medications, including a form of ketamine, taken under a doctor's supervision, and lithium, can help. So can some types of talk therapy, such as cognitive behavioral therapy. I find that targeting modifiable risk factors, like reducing alcohol use or treating mental illness, often helps get people past suicidal thoughts. In the U.S., there are around 130 suicides per day. Many guys never make it to a mental health professional to get treatment. Because of this, each of you plays a role in learning how to talk about suicide to yourself and others in a way that can potentially turn the numbers around. If getting to a professional office feels complicated, at least call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, and definitely do so in a crisis at 800-273-8255. Again, that number is 800-273-8255. They'll talk to you about the best next steps that could help. And now, how I keep it together with Cal Henderson. For most people, enduring the workday means successfully clearing their inbox. For Cal Henderson, co-founder and chief technology officer of the communication software company Slack, which has more than 12 million daily users at 750,000 companies, the messages never stop. Here's how the married father of two finds his balance. 6:45 a.m., fake commute. Like millions of other Americans working from home, Henderson, 40, had trouble establishing a morning routine. You have to be a lot more intentional about separating your work and life now. For me, my 45-minute commute was that separation. Now I go out for a one-mile walk in the morning, almost like a fake commute. My goal is to walk every street in San Francisco. I use this app called City Strides, and I'll tell you how many streets you have left to walk. I'm nowhere near done. 10:30 a.m. Use the 5-minute rule. These days, Henderson says his calendar is filled with back-to-back calls and Zoom meetings. To free up time for himself and others, the Slack HQ institutes the 5-minute rule. Every meeting must be set to end 5 minutes before the conventional 30-minute or hour-long window. It's so everybody can go and have a break, stretch their legs, get a snack, etc. It's difficult to maintain that focus on the online calls. 12:15 p.m., schedule lunch dates. Working from home also means the CTO rarely has the opportunity to see his colleagues. For that reason, Henderson plans weekly lunches with his team to boost morale. We're all just eating lunch on Zoom. There's no formal agenda, but I definitely have a much better day when I'm able to take lunch off or with them. At 3:15, hit Do Not Disturb. Henderson takes full advantage of the Slack custom status when his day is looking packed. I use the Do Not Disturb setting, so if someone sends you a direct message, it's not going to pop up unless it's an emergency. At Slack, we have a 3-hour block scheduled for engineers, just so they can have time to write code and focus. 5:30, play Uno. At the end of the workday, Henderson prioritizes at least an hour with his wife and two kids. No devices allowed. We use Slack in our house as well, he says, but just to be with them for a few hours every day. That's our set schedule that happens every night. Right now, my 6-year-old obsessed with playing Uno. I've played about 30 hours of it so far. And finally, 10:15, actively de-stress. After work, Henderson doesn't unplug by sitting on the couch in front of the TV. Instead, he relaxes in bed with audiobooks, played at 2 to 3 times a normal speed, so he can finish them quicker. In 2019, I listened to almost 200 books. I listen to a lot of sci-fi books. My wife hates it when I call it reading. I need to take a moment here to remind you that you're listening to Men's Health Magazine on site in the Sound Radio. You can listen to site and sound on channel HD4 on 88.7 KUHF, channel 8.5 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as on Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices. You can also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at siteintosound.org. We are Sight into Sound Radio since 1967. Next, recovery made me stronger, happier, calmer, funnier, steadier, sharper, and an all-around more awesome person. Addiction trends accelerated during COVID-19 as stress levels increased and support networks crumbled. Meet 8 men who have faced their struggles, many of them decades before the pandemic mess, and discovered new, improved versions of themselves through recovery, as well as life lessons we can all learn from. People in recovery will tell you that addiction isn't just about neurochemical dependency or intoxicating substances or thrill-seeking behaviors. Addiction is also connected to control, security, and self-worth, all of which took a massive beating during the pandemic. When Men's Health polled 1,111 people through SurveyMonkey, 75% of respondents said they are close to someone struggling with addiction, and 40% reported an increase in cravings for addictive substances or behaviors. One reason? They don't have other people around to keep them feeling connected, grounded, and upbeat, says Dr. Ken Duckworth. The fraying of connectivity can trigger addictive behaviors: alcohol, painkillers, drugs, porn, gambling, and relapse for those in recovery. There's also still a stigma attached to addiction, which means people often suffer in isolation. Our survey showed that 34% believed they had an addiction or a problem, and 27% thought others would think less of them if they were in recovery. Psychiatrist Zima Sanchez says that to fight the stigma, it helps reframe addiction as an illness. If you think about patients that have cancer, able to beat their cancer, what do you call them? Well, you call them survivors. The men profiled here all push the stigma to get help. And beyond managing their addictions, sometimes after a few attempts, they found something else. They discovered that sobriety wasn't an end, but rather a means to a stronger, happier, healthier life. Recovery made me a better listener. Chris Marshall, 38, had been sober from alcohol for 10 years when he decided to open a bar. His spot, Sands Bar, in Austin, lacked one thing: booze. As the only black kid in a primarily white neighborhood, Marshall discovered in high school that drinking was an easy way for him to fit in. Sam went for college, fraternity life. But fitting in didn't mean strong bonds. And he says alcohol became his self-medication for anxiety and depression. After dropping out of school, Marshall said his life began to spiral out of control until he checked into a rehab at age 23 and found sobriety and connection. Alcoholism festers in isolation. Follow a decade of recovery, he opened Sands Bar, a place that could help bring together people who choose not to drink. In fact, he says they seem to have connected on a deeper level, both with one another and with him behind the counter. Here's what he's learned. 1. Listen with your whole self. True conversations take place away from screens. If your smartphone is facing down at a table, pocket it, and sit in a section of a bar or restaurant where a TV isn't in view. 2. Tell people you are listening. That can sound like just an okay, or I hear you, Marshall says. Brief interjections let people know you're engaged and encourage them to continue. Silence often doesn't. And finally, 3, don't fix. Listening is not about curing or diagnosing, he says. It's about being present. That can feel daunting, but there's so much healing in the ability to have someone listen to you. Next, recovery made me a better dad. Danny Trejo, 76, hit 53 years sober from drugs and alcohol, with 398 acting credits to his name, as well as a new memoir, Trejo. He went to his first 12-step meeting at the age of 15 and found sobriety in prison. Through recovery, he picked up something else, parenting tools. Do you believe recovery made you a better father? Trejo, I don't think I would have been a father without recovery. Anyone can become a father, but being a dad, my kids love me. One of my kids will call me every day. If it wasn't for recovery, they'd be writing me up in prison. I'd be sending them nice Christmas cards, stuff like that. Did you ever fear that you would pass on your addiction to your kids? My children have never seen me loaded. I was clean and sober 18 years before I had my first son, Danny Boy. Great kid. Never had any problems. My son Gilbert, he shot dope, but he's been 6 years clean now. My daughter Danielle, she shot dope. She got 7 years clean now. So this program's not only let me know where to take my kids, it surrounded me with a support system that was able to help my kids from using. The support group saved their lives. What lessons have you learned about being a father, specifically from the 12 steps? First of all, you can work the 12 steps on your kids. God, in all his wisdom, didn't make me do wise. If I do something stupid, it won't take him by surprise. And believe me, I'm always doing something stupid. What the program taught me was tolerance. Hey, I made mistakes too. To love my kids no matter what, and don't snivel. Every day we pray, God, give me the patience and give it to me right now. You have no idea what's coming when you're clean and sober, but I can guarantee you it's me better than what you had. Recovery helped me find real connection. Pro skateboarder Brandon Turner, 39, thrashed San Diego's Pacific Drive in the 1990s, but suffered from alcohol dependency. It wasn't until he got sober that he broke through. In skateboarding culture, after you land tricks, you celebrate with beers, says Turner. Landing a trick was like getting a job promotion. So at the skate park, it was a constant celebration. The party ended, though, when Turner received a 17-month sentence for 2 DUIs between 2013 and 2014. He was 31 at the time, but he had built a strong reputation and a lucrative early career as a skateboarding child prodigy. Prison introduced him to AA meetings and the realization that maybe it wasn't the culture of skateboarding that was to blame for his addiction. Maybe it was him. After Turner left prison, he entered a 12-step program and told his skateboarding friends he was sober. They were proud of me. That made me want to keep going. In June 2020, he founded a skating program with Healthy Life Recovery in San Diego, in which he teaches the basics of the sport to aspiring skateboarders in recovery. When you're suffering, you tend to live in your head and have that feeling that you're the only one going through it. But being part of a community of people going through the same thing, you now have this new support. For Turner, the word support means more than just being around skateboarders. I'm constantly checking emails and responding to messages from people who are trying to get help. But it's not just about getting sober. It's about connections. Here's an interesting fact. Men's Health says 71% of Americans view gambling as morally acceptable in 2020. That's the highest level of acceptance since Gallup started asking the question in 2003. In their survey, 11% of men reported gambling more during the pandemic. Here are some more survey results. 69% of male respondents said they considered alcohol to be addictive. 63% said the same about gambling, and 59% did so about recreational drugs. Though workaholic has entered the vernacular, most people didn't consider work to be addictive, only 28% overall. 75% of respondents are close to someone who struggles with addiction, with extended family members accounting for 44%. And close friends accounting for 40%. 7% of people surveyed wished someone would intervene in their addictive behaviors. If no one does, try community reinforcement approach and family training. It's using relationships for good, Dr. Duttworth says. It's designed for people who love you. And finally, 37% of respondents have tried at least one type of treatment. The most common, individualized counseling at 18%. Mental health services are not on pause during the pandemic. From online counseling to virtual 12-step meetings. In fact, some people would say that AA on Zoom is better because you can actually see one person at a time. You're not as distracted. Dr. Duttworth says, we have come to the end of our program. I've been reading Men's Health magazine. I'm Peter Gilmore, and this has been a production of Sight into Sound Radio, Houston, Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3. On this week's Texas Monthly Archives, we're reading articles featuring the world-famous Chicken Ranch. So we're following in that same theme with our audio-described movie, Saturday Night.
Texas has a whorehouse in it.
The hospitality and friendliness never changed, and neither did Miss Woola Jean's strict set of rules. She liked her ladies, as she called them, to treat her customers real good, but never in an unladylike way. It wasn't always easy in them days to come up with hard cash.
Well, you just keep that in the bag and I'll take it out back as soon as we're finished.
So for a while, as the story goes, the girls begin accepting poultry in trade. And that's how the place got its name, the Chicken Ranch.
It's just a village, but an old-time country place. Nothing too high tone, just lots of goodwill and maybe one small thrill, but there's nothing.
You know how hard this is for me to say.
I love you. Will you marry me?
Oh, Ed Earl, I've loved you since I was 16 years old. But I've thought about this for a long time. And as much as I'd love for it to work, I know deep down in my heart it ain't never going to be.
And I will always love you.
Dolly Parton, Burt Reynolds, Jim Nabors, and Dom DeLuise star in the audio-described musical The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Wednesday, January 6th. More effective treatment for seborrheic dermatitis. Dear Dr. Roach, I have seborrheic dermatitis in my ear canal.